I wrote this a few hours ago and it's called Time. You are both my best friends and my worst enemy. When I'm happy, you shorten yourself, making my moment of happiness short-lived. In sadness, you lengthen yourself in order to cause me more pain, and in doing so, take pleasure in my suffering. You take complete control of our lives, their lives, and most of all, my life. Deciding when I wake up, when I sleep, when I eat, and when I speak is your forte. You tell me I have as long as I want with the people I care about, when instead you lie and take them away. Surrounding me with my enemies is your sick way of saying thanks, and you don't even provide me with the means of escape. I struggled to come to terms with what you were doing to me and felt like giving up. Just then, though, you brought a new friend into my life, along with the promise of infinite time with them. I had just regained some happiness when you struck me with another blow, tearing my new friend away from me and sending them as far away as possible. It is me, however, who will have the last laugh when I ensure that you are the person that neither time nor I will forget.
Thanks, Alan. Next up, could we please have to the mic Mary O'Connell.
It is called Royal Flush. It's square, quite grey, and stands outside the city library. The new public convenience is not exactly free. Drop 20 cents into a slot, and you, as well as me, along with Michelle Pfeiffer, can have a silent tea. Consumed by curiosity, I ventured towards the door. A girl emerged, so I went in. My need to go was sore. I hadn't read what I should do, nor put in 20 cents. Dear God, I wondered if by chance I'd gone into the gents. The automatic door slid shut. I pressed the special lock, then lowered myself onto the bowl. But got a nasty shock. A lever shot out from the wall and pushed against my arm. My jeans were round my ankles as I rose up in alarm. Then water spurted everywhere and drenched me down below. I hadn't even pulled a chain that might induce the flow. While locked inside the steely tomb, I wrestled out of sight with stocking tights and handbag, but got another fright. While doing my best to button up, the automatic door began to open inch by inch. I sank down to the floor. To use this mad contraption and avoid looking a freak, you should study the instructions before you take a leak.
The tourism board would be interested in hearing about that. It's up to receive Mr. Joe Sweeney.
Hello. This is another extract from a work that I'm writing at the moment called Dear Principal. It consisted of a series of letters from a teacher to a principal who she's not happy with, and various incidents occur in the school which are alarming, so she just writes letters to him about it. And this particular event is where she's actually discovered a melt in the classroom and how she responds to this. She actually stands upon the chair. And here we are. Dear Principal, up here on the chair, I have plenty of time to write. I could be up here for quite some time. Let me, if I may, begin at the beginning. When I arrived in the class, I gave the pupils work to do and sat at my desk. Then suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I detected movement. For a moment, I thought it was perhaps a small pupil running furtively to the wastepaper basket. None of the pupils are that small. Then I thought that perhaps it was a pupil contacting another by means of throwing a paper ball. I looked up suddenly, but could see nothing amiss. The class were all working quietly. I should have known there was something amiss. Turning to my book again, I continued reading for about 10 minutes, when again I saw, no, that's not the right word. I more felt something. You know what I mean? I just sensed a movement. Looking up, I saw to my horror the little furry thing running furtively but with great determination across my desk. I was paralyzed for a moment, and it ran down the leg of the table and then ran up mine. It was at this point, the principle, that my paralysis ended, and in a word, and to put it mildly, all hell broke loose. Now, it wouldn't be quite adequate to say that I stood up. The movement was more akin to the Red Sea in the Bible. I rose up. I reared up. I took all with me. The chair, the table, books, copies, yay, all rose with me. It was, I suppose, really and more or less an eruption. Judging from the alarmed expressions on the faces of my students, my volcanic reaction should well have registered under Richter. The upshot of this reaction of mine was that the mouse was sent flying towards the wall, where it lay senseless for a moment, before recovering and scurrying for cover under a press in order to decide on its next move. The table now being upturned on the ground and thus offering no possible refuge, I headed forthwith to the furthest corner of the room from the scene of my emotional upheaval. I lost no time climbing onto a pupil's desk, which he very kindly and quickly vacated with a look of alarm on his face when he saw me descending on him purposefully. And this is, my dear principal, where I have remained and will continue to remain until the bell. It is from this springboard, as it were, that, as I said, I am now launching my epistle to you. I have to send a pupil to get my writing paper from my bag on the floor, as I would not like anything to interfere with our correspondence, as I know you have come to depend on them. Doubtless they was just the illusion that you were at the cold face in education, keeping in close touch with your staff, perhaps even giving you the impression that you were doing your job. 11:30 p.m. I am still on high. I'm waiting impatiently for the bell. This is a great vantage point. None of the pupils can get away with anything. I'm enjoying a new sense of power in my new elevation. In fact, I might adopt this position as a regular strategy. As soon as that bell goes, I will gain wings and be gone. No sign of mouse and last appearance. But I know he's around. How psychic did you wish? I just feel it. Yours lost today. May.
Good morning, Mr. And next up, could we please welcome to the first of the world, Anna Marie.
It's called Clutus. It's what the probably literature. Clutus. It is over, like another day. Neither alchemy nor longing can temper this heart, at least not as you desire it. Like another day, moths and ghosts move across the brow of evening, rising dusk, before night embraces day, quenching her candles, leaving only darkness and a smoky patches.
Thank you. again. And next up, could we take our famous character?
You came since you met in Drumlish. She fancied you silly, you wish. With your phony charms and octopus arms, you're always a weird kind of fish. He galloped all night to Macroom. He lived by the sword in our room. He supped there and ate. Fresh horses await. The white witch foretold of his doom. A pompous old man in Rosslare insisted on paying his own fare. But you have a pass. It's not for my pass. He sniffs with his nose in the air. The waiter. There she sits, just as he knew she would. Surrounded by empty stretches of sand, he knows he's over an hour early. The running mooring is high and dry. But he had allowed for that too. Donning his new boots, he slung a small canvas lunch sack and set off, leaving Seagull outboard in the van. The flood tide is only starting. His fishing gear is already aboard, faithful, swinging at the mouth of the cove. What a find this secluded spot had been. The day is too good to waste. He'd stroll to the tender and slide her to meet the sea, lunch, and be aboard in no time. 15 fathoms out on the flat, his left leg sinks into a soft patch. That's strange, he slightly amused. Carefully, he probes forward. No, not firm enough. He is too long at this game to get reckless. Next, one step back onto his free right foot. Take the floor and mind the dresser. Not firm. Change, but down the sinks also. Okay, let's see now. Rotate this one. Yes, you can, but it only loosens to deepen. He tries to lean across to his last clear footprints. He struggles and staggers onto his side. This is very embarrassing. An armada of leisure and commercial craft will now be flying just out of sight beyond Blackball. Hopefully none will call by for a sheltered spot of cooking. Too fine. Such a ribbing he gets. Here comes Stick in the Mud past the sea dancer. Trying to change tack, horse loses the right boot somehow. His iron bracelet socks are a snug fit. A small dash of panic. Sing out. A scatter of skulls, shrieks and protests. Wait. Now listen. No. Nothing. Twisting, urgently waving, horror-struck filters and gut, how quickly the creed fills in. Why didn't he follow his mooring line running from the shore? Bow to be a flamingo. His mind drifts back to a painting he'd often seen at the big house. A red-coated captain sat on a stone fence surrounded by a swirl of foxhounds. A medieval horses, most with riders already aboard, impatiently snorting clouds of mist. A manservant straddles and struggles with the captain's right boot, tugging hard. What was that picture called? The water is so clear until it reaches the black, muddy quicksand. A waiter tiptoes past with barely a glance. Boots are full now, but of course, he knows there is no escape. Yet, he's calling hoarsely and listening. If I could reach my bag, get a drink of water. Heart pounding, he scoops with both hands, but only turns up more goo. He's more upright now, but up to his waist in mud, arms and water. There should be a large bottle of loose water aboard still, next to a small shot of boot-like hooch. Surge of anger. Fellow fury at his own silly mistake. This godforsaken hole. The DHS aerial beckons idly from the wee house. So near, yet so far. said to you within the estimate only about 3 minutes at best. I didn't ever again mock was no friend with Robert Dingley, no. Let there be no panic, let it organize. With each passing moment an update, it will be less than two. I must be losing my touch, she muses. No, the choice I'm making now. Okay, trying to make my peace. Still checking his watch between tiny waves, but first, if I could remember the name of that lovely painting, if only.
and I will come to you in the night and tell you of my size and of uncharted territory as I myself found it upon. You may wring your hands and furrow your brows, or take my kiss on your forehead, and you will know that this is what he gives me, that my trees sway for him. No need to fret, I will never leave you. How could I? You stand within my doorframe. You are the point part of me that has no name. You take my hand with a lanyard stark. And out of the blue, I will come again to sit beside you on the stairwell, when clouds have scurried over the rainbow, when I am a song that the dog is separate, when he is the itch at the back of my heart that I cannot reach to scratch. But I must turn and go to him now, he is waiting. Out of the blue, he came in a shimmering flame, strangely able to gaze the waters of my smile, give me firefly kisses in the night. Out of the blue, he came to take me to his arms, and out of the blue. A woman shouldn't look like a man, he says. She is all circles and waves. Her stony speech rises crestfallen from the ocean. Is a woman to feel like one? Is a woman to move like one? And so she bit the bullet, came out of the shadows she had danced circling around him in, and flew as the clothesline straight to him. There are so many layers to a woman, he said, gently unwinding the tangled sheets from her mummy's white flesh. Yielding, she let him, unsure as to why once were moons of women, patterns of days and numbered to stand in a straight line, and water still flowed according to the laws of gravity, as love always had them. And when he vanished, in curling smoke from her temples, whole centuries had passed, she returned to being a modern man, crop circles consumed the fields of their understanding.
Is there anyone else out there before I go ahead? Would you like to hear about it? My pleasure.
I'm going to a poetry fest in Florida next month. I'm sorry, I'm contributing to being. But Barack Obama's presidential inauguration ceremony is happening in this fest. And everything is blinding from us. Watching Barack Obama being inaugurated as president is one of the official events on the festival program. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, because of the festival mania workshop, there's over 100 poets attending, and every poet is being presented the opportunity of going to the stage and declaiming a poem that must be run the 8 line to mark the occasion. Considering doing a poem called A New Hope, that is not what a new hope is called, A New Hope. The would-be of it line up with their goal. He who demurs divinity is hailed by the Senate. Only the moon, like a distant druid riddled isle, lies free. As far-flung legions serve tax of the points to you. Yet to come are he who would listen to his iPod as New York burns, and he who would point his own hat at the center. History is relentless, and the new dark ages beckon like an oil.
We're going to have to, our after party probably after the judgment shot to bring on something. If it's not there, it'll be from our first fighter, but it seems to be 99% the case. But that's right. So, could we keep now a quarter to the mic, Mr. Dore Harding.
Thank you.
The night we stayed at Selby, the moon shone full and near. We marvel at the landscape, but still held West Kerry dear. We supped from a fresh urn, delving into Homer deep, and from Homer's land we slipped away into a fitful sleep. From there we heard a song so strange that nearly made us wake. Rise up, you wine deep men, Apollo's voice at stake. Go feast your eyes upon my soul, my valley, mountain, moon. Rise up, before the dawn sinks away to noon. But no oracle could move or stir. The three wise men who slept, Apollo in the trust to awe, and Dionysus wept. And weeping were the three wise men, realizing all too soon, Apollo's ghost was dead and gone, as was his midnight moon. Thanks. This is called Full Stop. That's another one for grammar reasons. My mother used to keep the head off me. When I went to college, there was a lady there called Valerie who used to give me hands with it. This is called Full Stop anyway. Most times when I speed read, I skip a line without thinking. I should have noticed those words. Just slow down. Take more heed of a comma, semicolon, or colon, almost a barrier to slow you down to a full stop. That would be out of order. I could miss a connection somewhere in that simile, and what was that metaphor? There was a time when I stayed behind the wheel to drive the rim of the world, but up to Odysseus and escape me face, glide through cul-de-sac and raise the clouds. Full stop did not exist then. Thanks.
You want to watch your class tonight? No? Ready? Ready? Anyone? Okay. I'm going to break my own tradition and with a different part tonight than the one I'm used to anyway. So I get it, you're going to suggest. I know you tell me, yes? No, I don't even quite start to death yet.
I didn't hear it.
And didn't you? No.
Come back next year.
But inspired by the bardic tradition, which Alan carries so passionately and inspiringly. Fado. I.e., a really, really long time ago, when the winds were free of us kindly guests. Trees were the hosts, and seas teeming with wonder. Fado, i.e., a really, really long time ago. Before we tamed the mammoth, and stole women in scores. There lived then, yes, even then, the eagle and the crow. There was one bird, though, not two like today. Yellow Brachon was your name, an eagle crow, was a bird that flew with a trail of time. Whosoever, the great Yellow Brachon passed over it with gifts abundantly with time. Come back, well wishing one. Their tears filled the sky that day when the great Yellow Brachon was no more. Eagle the eye to the sky, the eye of earth in your own, crow the palm to the trees, the ear of earth's new vigilance, hearing no sighs, seeing no pleas, just passing the time that's created for those, for those, for those, until the ungodly alien goes, or unbreaks the pact, and returns to the other palm, time goes. Good job. Carl Lager, number 3.